Hey guys, this is Rose, and if you're listening to this, you found the Rose Quinn Podcast.
This is the Rose Quinn Podcast.
Treasure rejection.
The community is so great.
It's going to be like my breakout story.
That I realized I really didn't like where my life was.
Yeah.
And I was going to pursue my dreams.
The Rose Quinn Podcast.
This is the Rose Quinn Podcast. Hey guys, this is Rose, and this is episode 10 of the Rose Quinn Podcast. So this is another one of the episodes where we're just going to kind of get straight into the interview. I've got an amazing author on the podcast today, and I was so lucky and kind of fangirled when I realized I was going to get to chat with her. Her name is Emily R. King, and I was just looking through my Kindle Unlimited one day and found this book called The 100th Queen. And I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but the cover was amazing. It was gorgeous. And the book was amazing also. We're just super lucky, because sometimes you see a book that has a beautiful cover but isn't always the greatest. So it was lucky. And she just had so 100th Queen is the first book in this series, and the third one actually just came out in February. It is called The Rogue Queen, and I've talked about The 100th Queen on the podcast before. It was one of my favorite books of the week, so I hope you guys read that one. There is a second one, and that is called The Fire Queen, and then so it's The 100th Queen, The Fire Queen, The Rogue Queen. And there's a fourth one in the book, which Emily told me was the last one. So hopefully she's not lying. The Warrior Queen comes out August 14th, 2018. And I will make sure to remind you guys as we get closer so that you can pick that one up. Because the series is so great, and I've talked about it before, so I won't go over it again. But it really, she's so amazing and talented in this world that she has built, and the characters that she is created are just so real, and it's so wonderful, even though it is very much a fantasy book. So what you're in here now is my conversation with Emily. But first I want to share her Twitter handle is @Emily_R_King. Make sure to follow her, show her some love, tell her how much you love her amazing books, and you can always follow me @RoseQuinny, QUINNY. It is the same on both Twitter and Instagram. And next week is when we'll start getting back to like the normal podcast setup, where I talk about a topic and kind of share some tips and tricks. And then we have an interview. Alrighty, you guys, here we go.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you. Thanks for making time for me, Rose.
Of course. And I saw on your website that you live in Utah. I love Utah.
I do. Yeah, I like it too. We've had kind of a tame January, which has been weird. We don't have as much snow as we normally do, but that's actually, I'm not complaining. It's actually nice. It's just odd.
That is nice. I grew up in Utah, and I think we lived there till I was about 9, and the snow was my favorite.
Yeah, where did you live?
We lived in Orem.
Oh, okay. Well, I live like right next to Orem. I'm in American Fork.
Oh, I love American Fork. I actually was just down there for a couple months. I was working at the University of Utah. So I lived up in Salt Lake.
Yeah, the U is really big.
It's so great. Big, and they're doing so much construction. So, Emily, the third book in the 100th Queen series, which is just the best, comes out just like next week.
Yes,
that's
next
so
week.
Exciting. So how does it feel to have that third book coming out? I know there's another one, so you're not quite to the end of this series, but how does it feel?
You know, I think every time I have a book come out, I'm always nervous up until it comes out, like especially the month before. And I was talking to a couple of other authors about it, and we like to call it the pre-publication blues. It's an odd, like, I guess it's kind of like right before you have your baby, how you're just done and you just want it out.
Yep.
It's equivalent to that. And then the day it comes out, it's no longer yours, mm-hmm. and it belongs to everyone else. And you let it go. Like, I just let it go. And so it's like that separation is kind of, it's bittersweet. There's lots of excitement, but it's like, oh, I did another book. How did that happen? Because you just don't really, I mean, you do it, but it doesn't feel real until readers are about to have it in their hands and everyone can have it. So it's really exciting, but it is really a mixed feeling.
Yeah. Well, I think that's so exciting. Does it feel different having a third one come out as opposed, like, does it get easier? Or do you still, like, from your first two books, is it really different?
I think in some ways it's easier and in some ways it's harder because you do know what's coming. You know you're going to get tagged in reviews and you know that people are going to have things to say.
Of course.
And I think as the series go on, it's interesting because this is unlike standalones. People gain opinions about characters and the world and plot and what they think should happen, and they become as much a part of the series as you are.
Yeah.
And sometimes you deliver to their expectations and sometimes you don't. So it's a very, in that way, I think it gets harder in a series, but it's also really fun because the readers come back because they love the character so much.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it is, once again, there's two sides to it. I do think probably overall it gets easier. It just does. I think you just learn to enjoy the high of it and, just celebrate as much as you can.
Yeah, I would bet. So can you share with us a little bit about your journey getting, you know, to that first book being published? When did you start writing The 100th Queen?
I started writing The 100th Queen, I believe I had the idea May of 15, I believe it was. And I actually was falling asleep at night in my,
of course.
You know how like that time where you're kind of not awake but not asleep, and the words "the 100th wife" came to my mind, and I thought, that's interesting, but it can't be. And I knew it was a title, but I was like, she can't be a wife because I write YA, so it has to be something else. And so I started to kind of mull over who she was, and I knew she was a queen. And by the time I woke up the next morning, I had the claiming scene all figured out in my head. And I sat down and I wrote that scene, and I knew who Tarik was, and I knew who Kalinda was, and then everything else just kind of grew around the two of them. So it was, I've never had an experience like that before, but it was
awesome.
Fun. I drafted it in about 9 months. In the meantime, I ended up parting ways with my agent at the time and querying again with this manuscript and agent within like a week and went on sub and sold it fairly quickly. So it's funny how like you spend years, I spent 8 years of writing and writing and writing, then all of a sudden it just went boom, really fast.
Yeah. Really,
which is kind of how it goes, I guess, slowly then suddenly.
Yeah. I mean, so you had an agent within a week after starting to query for this manuscript. That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing story, so I understand, but, like, that's crazy fast.
It was way faster than I thought. Most people I know that, most people are on, like, at least their second or third agent. It's very rare where the first agent actually works out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was preparing myself for like a 6-month gap because it's pretty standard. And I didn't have a contract. I had a handshake deal. And so I was able to start querying right away, whereas a lot of other people have to wait like 30, 60 days depending on the contract that they signed. And so that was working for in my favor too. But yeah, that was crazy fast.
That's so crazy fast.
Would be. And I love my new agent. We get along really great and I'm very happy with her. So it all worked out.
Good. Then you know it's meant to be. I mean, clearly it was meant to be that that book had to be out there if it was, you know, you got that agent in a week.
Right.
That's awesome.
Right.
I love it. So how did, that is like I've talked to a lot of authors and I haven't heard anybody who got an agent within a week of querying, but how did you approach querying that time and before when you did it? You know, what kind of research did you do or resources did you use to help you with that query process?
I like agentquery.com. I think it's the most reliable, and I think most agents keep it up to date. So if they're close to queries, it is almost always accurate in that way. And it's a lot of the links are up to date, so you can link through to check out what their submission guidelines are so you don't screw it up, because even within agencies, agents have different preferences, and they can change too. So I like to research agents as I'm writing the book to get a feel for who is looking for my genre at the time. And then right before I queried, generally I would double check all of that and make sure that nothing had changed. And then I would send out about 10 queries to start with. And I like to mix it up, like your dream agent with maybe like your B choice with maybe like your C choice, because you just never know who's going to respond. And sometimes like junior agents are faster at responding to you. And if they read something fast and offer a representation, that could trigger a domino effect of other agents. So I think it's good to query widely as long as you're following the guidelines.
That's very important.
Not to query before your manuscript's ready. I made that mistake more than once in early on. And I still wonder if those agents remember me. Like, I really hope they forgot who I am. I did that. But I just didn't know as much. I was so eager to get out there. And by the time that I really figured it out, it was a lot better. But don't query too soon.
I will admit that I've made that mistake. When I was in high school, I wrote a book and was like, this is the greatest thing in the world. It's so bad, but I, you know, I don't think I send out very many query letters, and I don't know who I sent them to, but I remember doing that, and I'm like, okay, I'm glad I'm not making those same mistakes anymore.
Yes, yeah, and I think everyone makes some of those mistakes just because you get so excited, and you hear all these great success stories, and you want it to be you, but yeah, it's okay to take your time. I think that's all right. I also think, and I have tried this, both times I got my agent, I queried in January. I feel like agents have new goals, and they're ready to go for the year, and they're getting back in the holidays, and they're just
ready.
They're not as swamped. And I think every other time of year, it's either summer, there's a conference, or there's something that's interfering. But if you query in January, there's a very good chance that you will hear back faster than any other time of year. And I have a friend that just got an agent this last month. Same thing. It was like within a week.
That's crazy. And she had heard
nothing. She had been crying since August, and all of a sudden, boom, all of this happened. I'm like, there's something to this January thing.
Okay, so, well,
I don't swear by it, but I do think there's something to it.
Yes. Well, I'm going to write that down because that's a good tip. Query in January.
Query in January.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about your mad world building skills, because that was one thing when I was reading The 100th Queen, and I, you know, have read quite a few, you know, YA fantasies and all of that lately. And I think you just did such a great job of creating a world where you didn't question anything. It's different than the world we live in today. You know, it's got I don't remember the name of the religion, but it's, you know, different than, you know, anything that I know of as someone who's not very well versed in that sort of thing. And so I just want to know what your process was with that. How did you hammer out all those details and keep it straight? Where did you get that inspiration from?
Well, as far as the religion went, I really like mythology. I've always really enjoyed mythology. And I didn't want to write a religion that exists. I felt like it would be disrespectful to take something that's sacred to someone else. And so I knew that if I was going to build my own religion, I needed to do it off of mythology that was really old and that a lot of people still kind of know about, but it wasn't going to offend anybody.
Yeah.
And I like, honestly, I think in another life, I would have totally been a pagan. I think that the idea of the gods and the goddesses and the earth, and like, I just really love that idea. And I wanted something that was a faith-driven culture without showing people who are of faith as sometimes zealots or they're big pushovers. And I think just sometimes, I don't know, in the media, people who have faith are just, I don't know, they're looked down upon and they're treated just disrespected. And I wanted the whole world to have trials of their faith, but also still their everything be built around it. Because I think that that's actually more like what life is like. We have a lot of different religions, and everyone believes something, and everyone has had their beliefs challenged. And so a lot of the world building came around that. I just wanted it to feel like real, I guess, is the thing.
Definitely does.
But it takes a lot of layers of religion. I mean, a lot of layers of revisions to get it to that point. My drafts are glorified outlines. They are garbage. And it takes a lot of read-throughs for me to weave in what I believe are authentic reactions and feelings and details. And I research the entire time I'm writing, right up until like proofreads. Yeah. I'm still researching and making sure that I've got what's on the page, it would feel real. And I think that you just can't be lazy when it comes to that. You've got to really love to read and research and to learn new things. And as long as you like to do that, world building will just come to you.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I've never written anything fantasy, so I always love to know, you know, how that comes to you and works in your brain. And that's what I've been told by a couple of different authors, is research, and a lot of research to make sure that it's real. Let's see. So this one is a two-parter question. What is the hardest part of writing for you, and what's the hardest part of being an author?
I think the hardest part of writing is getting what is in my head to show on paper the way that I see it in my head.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's a feeling that you're trying to express. You don't necessarily have the words to express it. It's just a mood. Like, I want this book or this story to have a mood. It's like, how do I express that mood in a story? And it's sometimes frustrating because what's on paper is nowhere near, most of the time, it's nowhere near what's in my head. And you have to be patient with your process. Yes. You have to really not give up on it and yourself, and wait, just keep pushing through until what's on the paper is closer to matching in your head. And then editors, really good editors and beta readers, will help you get it the rest of the way, so that it's not just about what's in your head and if you like it, but that it is conveyed to readers as well. That's really hard, because there's a lot of times I'm like, why the crap did I choose this career? I suck at it, you know? Because most of the time you feel like you do. It's always a work in progress.
For sure.
So you have to be okay with that. And then I think the hardest part of being an author for me is, it's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't know. I read that question when you wrote it to me, and I was like, how honest should I be about this?
Be as honest as possible.
Be honest?
Yeah, be honest.
I really love interacting with fans. I really, really enjoy it. I think the most frustrating part is that this day and age, people can go online and say whatever they want about your work.
Yeah.
And for the most part, I'm really objective about it, because I understand that there's a book for everybody.
For sure.
But I don't think reviewers are always that objective.
Mm-mm.
And the slanderous reviews get more attention than the happy reviews.
Yeah.
And you can't defend yourself or your work. That is a huge no-no. And I would never go and tell someone that they're wrong, because how they feel isn't wrong. Yeah. I would never say that to someone. But you also can't be like, well, but did you think of it this way? You are out of the conversation. So when I say release day comes and you put your work out to the world and it's no longer yours, it isn't.
Yes.
It is now left to the masses to do what they want with it. And I have the best fans ever, so honestly, I can't really complain. And I don't read my bad reviews, because it messes with my head.
Yeah.
And it slows my creative process. I know some people can, but for me, I have too much work to do, and I don't have time to rationalize reviews, honestly. But I think that the interaction with people, so it's like my favorite thing and my worst thing about it.
I can definitely see how that'd be hard, though. As a person who loves and reads a lot of books, you know, there are books that are not my favorite, but when I review them, I try to be still kind and respectful, because I can understand that it took someone a really long time to write all of it and the process they went through. But I think, you know, the general public, most of them don't understand that. So I can definitely see how dealing with that interaction and that side of it would be really hard.
Well, and nowadays, it's like everything's online. You know, 200 years ago, you didn't see this kind of stuff.
No.
And now it's right there for anybody to look up, and you can't control it. Mm-mm. Maybe that's my main issue. I'm a bit of a control freak.
Oh, I'm right there with you.
Right? Like, and there's no way you're controlling that. So you just have to let it go altogether.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you half answered the next question. You told us what your favorite part of being an author is that interaction with fans. But what right. is the best part of being a writer for you?
The escape. I love the escape. Yeah. I love that I can be in my house and I can go somewhere else all day long and then I snap back into it and I haven't moved all day, you know, but I have. I've
yeah.
been other places and seen other things and explored and learned things about characters and myself, and the process being never ending is frustrating, but it is also wonderful because there's always room for improvement. And
yeah.
I think any writer who really loves to write likes growth. They like to challenge themselves. They like to learn new things, and it never gets boring. It just doesn't, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome.
I love that. That's one of my favorite things. This group that I'm in on Twitter, we did, you know, post like a first draft of, you know, your first chapter and then where it's at now. And it was so cool to see everyone else's growth of, you know, the things they've been working on. But then I looked back through a couple of mine and I was like, whoa, like this is actually so much better than it used to be. So it's always good to have those moments when you spend most of your time being like, I'm the worst writer in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you always feel that way when you're in the middle of it, but yeah. I really believe that anybody who wants to be an author or writer and keep at it, and they keep at it, it will happen.
Yeah.
It's just the people who have that kind of grit to push through, they will.
Yep.
I really believe it.
I'm not a patient person, but I'm a persistent person.
Most of us are.
Yes.
Publishing it makes you become somewhat of one, but for the most part, like, none of us are.
No.
That's the funny part. It's like, why did we pick this industry? It's the slowest industry on the planet.
It was the worst decision, but I'm persistent, so I'll put up with it, even though it makes my patience, like, crazy.
Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about how your drafts are, you know, basically just, you know, like outlines like that you go through and add back in. So I'm assuming that you have to, you know, outline even before you draft with all the details that you have in this series. How do you go about that process? Do you outline, do you just plot, or kind of just let yourself, you know, or are you more of like a pantser?
I'm actually both. I like to have my main plot points etched out, so I kind of know where I'm going as I go. I like the 7-point plot system, and I like the save the cat plot system because it's the Hollywood formula, and I think it's an instinctual way of storytelling. It's one that a lot of us relate to without knowing that we relate to it because we see it so much in movies and television. But I also like to leave room for my characters to act out and do what they want. Because if you box them in too much, sometimes it can feel stifling and you're not excited about what's coming. You're like, oh, I know that.
Yeah.
But if you give them some room to explore, it keeps you excited to find out what's next. But I almost always have my beginning and my end, and I try and have a couple of ideas in the middle. I don't always know where they're going to land, but I know I have like those payoff scenes that you're excited to get to. And that way I'll finish drafting. Because otherwise, you get to, like, 30 pages in, and you're like, this is crap, and you're done. You know? You have to have something to look forward to and have those scenes, like, in your back pocket to work towards.
Yes.
Or you might not finish.
Yes, that's very true. Something that I do, I have a few of those scenes as well that I think of as I'm writing, but I almost never know the end of my book until like right before I get there, which is sometimes really frustrating because I'll write, you know, like a bunch of different ends, but I feel like it's more exciting that way for me. I'm like, well, my characters are just going to tell me what they want to do.
Yeah. And I think that there's a big part of that too. And sometimes the end doesn't feel as like finished as the other endings, and you have to do what's appropriate for the story and your characters. I mean, when I finished book 3, oh, my editor said, I think there might be another book. And I was like,
no.
And then I went away and thought about it. And I was like, yes. I need to write another book. But I just had to get to that point where I was willing to go there.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's what it takes. Endings are almost there. I think they're almost harder than beginnings in that way.
I think they are.
How do you tie it all up?
Yeah. I just finished a, you know, final revision of a book that I've been working on, and I sat over the end for just ever because I'm like, does this And I ended up realizing that I will have to write another book to really tie it all together. But it was that moment where I was like, I can't fit everything the way I want it to right now. I was like, no, yeah. Now I have to write another 90,000 words. But there was no way for me to force it as it was right there. I was like, oh, come on, characters, just do what I want you to do.
Right. And you don't know that until you get to the end.
That's
and
so you're like, silly. Great. Yep. Oh my gosh. I think it's so funny. I think a lot of people, you know, non-writers don't really, can't understand that when I tell them, like, no, I just let my characters tell me what they want to do. They're like, that doesn't make any sense. I'm like, it makes all the sense in the world. They're the ones running the story, not me.
Yeah, and your character should be an extension of the world, so they feel authentic. And so if you're trying to force them around, they're not going to feel, like, flesh.
Mm-hmm. When did your love of writing start? You know, what was your first experience with creating, a world that wasn't this one?
I was 14, and I was in honors English, and I had this evil little troll as my teacher. He hated me. He hated me, like, and I'm not even exaggerating. My dad was my principal of my high school all 4 years, okay? So I was the principal's daughter, and he didn't like my dad, and so he was a jerk to me. And
oh my
so
gosh.
I kind of was resistant in his class, but he essay. And I went home and I started writing about this donut shop. I don't know why. I guess I like donuts.
Who doesn't?
And about like 2 hours into it, I realized it was dinner time and I was like, where did the time go? I'm not done yet. I really enjoyed this. I had never felt that way about homework. Like normally you're watching the clock going, did I get it done? And it just ate up 2 hours. And I think that's when I realized I like this. Like I wasn't necessarily good at it, but I liked it.
Yeah. You know?
So that was really the first time I realized that I love to write.
I love that. That's so awesome. And it was from this troll teacher who hated you, who made you realize it.
He actually gave me a pretty decent grade on that, I think. I still have the essay. I don't remember my grade on it, but I did save it, which is cool. It's not very well written, but I have it.
But that's okay. It's proof of your love of writing, and we're never good when we first start, right?
Never. And that is proof of it.
Yes. We all have that proof. I've got that book that I wrote in high school that I will keep forever just to look at and be like, I've come so far.
Yeah. If you got rid of it, one day you'd be so sad. So keep it and lug it around, even though it's a pain, make sure you have it for sure. Yeah.
So this is what I have so many books that I need to read, but I love to know and find out about new books. So I wanted to see what your favorite book is right now. If you have multiple favorite books, that's okay. You can give me more than one.
Oh, I read in so many different genres. I kind of just like read blurbs and go, oh, that sounds really good. And
I love that. Yeah, I do the same thing.
And it's getting harder to read in YA fantasy, I think just because I write it and I don't ever want to be duplicating what someone does. And I think, honestly, I think I'm harder. But I've really enjoyed Rain and the Fallen. And I loved Speak Easy, Speak Love, which is Mikhail George's retelling, 1920s. I love the feel of it.
I love that.
Let's see. What else did I really like recently? I liked, oh my gosh, it's on my shelf. What's the name of it? Oh, One of Us is Lying was really good.
Okay.
Royal Bastards was really good. I try to read as many as of the 2017 debut books as possible. Mm-hmm. But I also like The Princess Saves Herself in this one. It's a book, it's a poems, and it's all like feminist type poems. It's really good.
I love
by Amanda Lovelace. And I read a lot of middle grade because my kids read middle grade. So I've just read the 9th book in the Wings of Fire series, which is fantastic. It's about dragons.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, it's so good. I wish I could write something like that. So I read all over the place, whatever I can get my hands on.
I think that's so important to read all over the place. I love to read all different kinds, types of genres, and I feel like it helps me be a better writer, just to see how a bunch of different people do it in a bunch of different categories.
Yeah, and I read for entertainment, so if I'm too technically involved with a book, I tend to put it down, and it's not because it's not good, but I see it more as the craft of it instead of the art of it, and I really want something that sucks me in, because I don't have a ton of reading time, and so I want to get lost.
Yes.
And it's getting harder for to have that feeling, but when I have it, I'm all in. Like, I love it. So, yes. Yep, it's fun.
I love it. Let's see. My last question, and this is off the cuff, but I just want to know what your number one tip would be for someone who's in that querying process right now.
I like to call it fury querying.
Ooh.
Okay, so what I do is I have those 10 queries that go out, and when you get a rejection, you're going to want to die. You do. You feel terrible, and you want to give up.
Yep.
And the best thing to do is if it's just a, you know, a no, and they didn't give you any feedback, and you're not quite sure, you know, what's going on, and you're in your early stages, and you really believe that your work is good, query right away. Find another agent or two and send a query out immediately. Don't wait a couple days. Do it even when you're upset, because I landed my agents both times because I was like, what do you mean you don't like this? Send it to the next person. And I think you have to be your biggest defender of your work.
Yeah.
And then when you get an agent, they become your biggest advocate and defender of your work. But until that point, you have to be all in. And there will be a temptation to give up, and there will be a temptation to stop and say, I did enough. But if you got to the point where you felt good enough about your work to send that first query, just keep sending them, because it really only takes one yes. And I can't tell you how many stories I've seen of people who were ready to give up and they sent just one more and that was it. And then they ended up with offers from people they had queried before who had gotten back to them. And like, you just never know. Querying is kind of a game, and publishing is a business. When agents request your work, or if they offer to rep you, it's because they have an editor in mind to sell it to. They already know who they want to pitch it to, and they're hoping who's going to buy it. So I think you just wait for that one person who has the right connection to know who they're going to sell your work to, because sometimes it's not about your work. Sometimes they just don't know the right editor, or they don't have that right connection. It has nothing to do with us, and we take it so personally because it feels so personal. It's not.
Nope.
So just keep pushing that button and sending it out until you find someone who falls in love with your stuff, because it happens. It will happen. It's the weirdest, most amazing feeling, because you're like, you feel like you cheated the lottery, like when it happens, but it will happen. So there you go.
I love that. That's
theory query.
Theory query. That's my favorite. That's such a good tip.
I told my friends, like, I'm so mad. I'm sending more queries.
Yes. I think that is such a good way to, you know, redirect the emotions that we can't stop from, you know, feeling when we get those rejections. I think that's really great.
And it's really the only thing you have control over.
Yes.
And it's a very helpless feeling when you send that stuff out. And when you're on submission with editors, that feeling is 10 times harder because your editor's sending it and your editor's getting the stuff. So querying really is a culling process to get us ready for how difficult publishing can be.
Yeah,
that's what it is. But the ones, the really strong ones, are the ones that survive it and just keep doing it and don't let it destroy them. I got to one point where I was ready to quit writing once or twice, and it was always the love of writing that brought me back. So by the time that I got serious, really serious about querying, I felt like there was nothing anybody else could say that I hadn't already said to myself. And if I could survive myself saying it, I could survive someone else saying it.
Yeah, it's way worse to hear it from yourself than somebody else.
It is. We're so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, there are people out there that really love their writing, think they're amazing, and I'm like, who are you? How do you not have doubt 24/7?
I would love to have that confidence all the time.
And there are those that have that, but for the most part, you get people like me, you know, who just hang in there just by like a thread and just keep going, and then it happens. So anyway, there you go.
Awesome. Theory query. I love it. Well, Emily, thank you so much for chatting with me and being on the podcast. Everyone is going to go buy The Rogue Queen, which comes out February 13th, 2018. Yay!
Wonderful. Thank you, Rose.
Of course.